Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
All eyes will be on Westminster tomorrow because Chancellor Rachel Reeves will be delivering Labour's first budget for 14 years. The party recently launched a new industrial strategy to rebuild the British economy, with the British Prime Minister Keir Starmer promising to slash red tape and rip out the bureaucracy that blocks investment. He was speaking to a room full of global executives. But what implications will that ambitious plan have for Ireland and our own reliance on foreign direct investment? I'm joined now by Professor of Business Economics at the University of Birmingham, David Bailey, and also Edgar Morgenroth, who's Professor of Economics at DCU. And thank you both for joining us. David, I'll start with you. The Labour government seems to be telling global investors that the UK is open for business with this new strategy. Is that the message, and is it getting through?
I think that's certainly the message. They're trying to say, you know, this is a new start. There's been a lot of uncertainty with previous governments. The Labour government is basically trying to say, look, we're open for business. They're going to really try to improve the planning system to make investment easier. The Green Paper is a discussion document, and it's trying to set out where they want the UK to be in terms of things like Industry 4.0, digitalisation, the road to net zero. So what they're trying to say is there's eight kind of priority areas that they're targeting. It's about trying to give certainty to investors, reduce risk, and encourage more investment in the UK.
So these eight key focus areas, what we're really interested in here in Ireland is how much emphasis is there on attracting foreign direct investment? In other words, are they going to eat our lunch?
So I certainly think there'll be more competition. If you look at the eight areas that have been set out, they are pretty similar to the seven priority areas that were set out by Conor Murphy back in June. The only real difference I can see is the UK is emphasising defence and Ireland is emphasising agri-technology. Otherwise, it's pretty much the same list. And it's the same sort of things that most economies are looking for. Investment in clean energy, advanced manufacturing, creative energies, digital, financial services, life sciences. So there will be more competition, I think. However, Ireland is in a better position, of course, because it is in the European Union and the single market. So investors coming to Ireland can serve a much bigger market than in the UK. The UK is going to have to offer something different.
Well, Edgar, what's your take on this? What does this strategy mean for us here in Ireland? We know we're often accused of being over-reliant on FDI, but do we have a very close competitor now?
David, it's good to speak to you. So, there's sort of two ways of looking at this. On the one hand, if there is a fixed amount of international investment to go around, then having a more competitive neighbour might possibly take some investment away from Ireland. The other way to look at it is to see how interrelated, despite Brexit, we still are with the UK economy. And if the UK economy was doing a little bit better than it has been doing, then that would actually give us a benefit, because that's a key market for us. So there are two ways of looking at it, and how it will end up affecting us is hard to tell. As David said, they're targeting very much the same sectors as we are targeting in Ireland, and indeed as every other advanced economy is targeting. So it's very competitive for this investment, if international investment. I think what we need to think about in Ireland is not just the FDI strategy, but also how we grow our own indigenous sectors.
So do you agree with David that Ireland is in a better position because we're in the EU when it comes to attracting FDI? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I mean, the EU is a far bigger market than the UK. And if you're investing to serve a market, the size of the market matters. There are some other areas where I think we're in much better position than the UK. I think in relation to an educated and young workforce, we're probably ahead. We have a greater share of university graduates, and those are very much in demand in those kind of sectors that are being targeted. So we're probably ahead there. We share some similar problems. Again, David mentioned planning. I think that that is as well known as an issue in Ireland. And of course, tackling climate change, you know, is something where we're also struggling to meet our targets. So that there are issues there. You know, it's something we've probably been very competitive amongst the most competitive in the world. Mm-hmm. And everyone's been trying to catch us. And so, yes, of course, the UK will try and do this. We will see how successful they are in that, because, again, the Green Paper is pretty aspirational at this stage, not so much concrete stuff
yeah,
in there yet.
We probably can't afford to sit back, though, and watch whether that strategy is successful or not. It is really interesting, though, to note, David, if I can come back to you on this, mm-hmm. that Keir Starmer's new strategy, this Green Paper, it doesn't tackle the elephant in the room. That's the impact of Brexit. Is there no mention of it in here?
No, there isn't. And that really is the elephant in the room. And coming back to what Edgar was just saying, it's been a hit to growth. So the Office for Budget Responsibility in the UK thinks that the sort of long-term hit to GDP growth will be about 4%. Others put that figure higher. In fact, some estimates put it as high as 5% already. So the British government, on the one hand, is saying we want to go for growth. And yet here we are with Brexit, and we're driving along with a kind of handbrake on slowing us down. So that's a fundamental contradiction, I think, in what the government is doing. And, you know, in previous years, it has been international issues that have really derailed governments, whether it was the financial crisis or back in the 1970s with the oil shock. So I have a real fear that actually not looking at Brexit is going to really sort of dampen growth. The government has said they want to reset the relationship with Europe, but we don't really know what that means, because they've ruled out joining either the customs union or the single market. And yet without that, we aren't going to get a boost to growth.
And isn't it fascinating as well that this Green Paper doesn't tell us about any strategic advantage of Brexit?
Well, that's right. That's probably because there isn't one. Ultimately, the UK government can say, well, OK, we can probably regulate in a more appropriate way for the UK than being in the European Union. But businesses don't want that. They don't want two sets of regulations because it adds to costs. Also, the previous government said, well, we can go out and do trade deals with the rest of the world. The UK has done that, but they are minuscule in their economic benefits compared with putting up non-tariff barriers with the single market, which is very close to us. And going back to what Edgar was saying, quite rightly, the hit to growth in the UK from Brexit has an impact on Ireland, because we are so interlinked as economies. We want each other to grow. That benefits each of us.
Edgar, does Brexit not allow Keir Starmer and the Labour government to set the rules and compete more aggressively?
The rules tend to be set by the bigger player. And relative to the EU, the UK is very small. And so that's something I think that the previous government also found out in their attempts to kind of cherry pick the benefits of EU membership, you know, trying to have the cake and eat it. That doesn't really happen. And then that doesn't really happen if you're the UK and dealing with China, or if you're the UK and dealing with the US, and those are the big markets. Sure, you can do some kind of a deal with a small country on your terms, but that's never going to be able to give you the sort of benefits that doing a trade deal with the likes of the EU would give you. Mm-hmm. So that strategy by the Tories principally, but you know, the fact that the Labour Party doesn't really want to unwind this, they're sort of implicated in this now too. That strategy was never a sensible strategy in the way trade policy plays out in the real world.
So will there be
I think ironically, the kind of one benefit of Brexit is that UK has had a very liberal migration policy. So immigration has increased, and that has boosted the economy. It's not quite what I think people who voted for Brexit had anticipated. But nevertheless, post-Brexit, we've put in place a kind of very liberal migration policy. Skilled workers can be brought into the countries. That's kind of the one good thing that has come out of this.
Will there be money in the pot in the budget tomorrow for this industrial strategy, David? Have they any money for it?
I think that's the $64 billion question. The problem that the government has is that it took on the fiscal rules put in place by the previous Conservative government. And there's two elements to that. One is that it will balance the budget over the economic cycle, but secondly, debt as a proportion of GDP will be falling in 5 years. The second of those rules is frankly nonsensical. And what Rachel Reeves has indicated is that she will kind of look at how we define debt in order to give some more kind of fiscal power. But frankly, that's tinkering at the edges. If this means she can spend $20 billion a year more on things like infrastructure or innovation or education, great. But is that really sufficient for the scale of the challenge we've got? No. And I think the fundamental problem is that Labour have tied one arm behind their back by taking on the previous government's fiscal rules. And by the way, if the Tories had somehow amazingly got re-elected, I don't think they would have followed their own rules anyway. So why is Labour doing this?
All right. Well, we wait to see what's in the UK budget tomorrow. David Bailey and Edgar Morgan Roth, thank you both. I want to bring our listeners some more text messages that are coming in on voluntary contributions. I must be living in a different country, says this listener. Visit any nail bar in the country and it's full of school kids getting false nails and manicures. Parents have the money, but it depends, obviously, on what their priorities are, says that listener. Another, my daughter is a newly qualified primary teacher. She's currently spending more than any of your listeners voluntary fees on basic classroom supplies. I don't think anyone should need to pay, particularly the teacher in that case. Another, I'm getting so mad listening to this. My son and my daughter go to a school that now has free hot lunches and free books and pencils, etc. How much more do people expect for free? What exactly do they want to pay for? I'm sick listening to parents who don't want to pay for anything anymore. They're our children and it's their education. Keep those messages coming in. It's 0870 32 32 32. David Coleman is here next.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.